I am going to take advantage of the Senate going on and on and see if we can get through this quicker. So I'm going to call this to order. Hopefully the members are here to hear and listen and see what we came out of after a couple weeks of negotiations, which were not the happiest time in the world for anybody, but that's part we do around this particular place. So you've got an agenda. I assume the agenda is out there. I'm going to say a few words. I believe my counterpart, Representative Bouguinas, will be saying a few words. We'll have the nonpartisan staff walk through the articles and spreadsheets. And then we'll have, if the commissioners are freed up from the blame game that's going on the other chamber, they will come on over. And then we have one person listed that wanted to say a few words. I'm certainly willing to hear if people wish to speak to the bill. I will probably limit it to 2 or 3 minutes so that we don't go on too long. We've all been in session and in non-session too long. So, I'm State Representative Tim Mahoney. I'm the House Chair of the Conference Committee. This is not the bill that we passed out of committee, however long ago it was. This is not the bill that we passed off the House floor, however long ago. And while I'm not happy that paid family leave fell to the ground, earned sick and safe time was never discussed, I'm not happy. I am not happy with the tens of millions of dollars that we were forced to cut because of the Senate's intransigence to raise revenue to help people in the state of Minnesota. These are programs that made a real difference in people's lives that we cut. We didn't just cut, we eliminated programs that are of great need to help Minnesota stay a forward-looking, a forward state with an economy that is the envy of most states in the nation. We did make some progress. We fought hard to keep as much equity funding as we could. And although it's at a lower level than is almost intolerable, we still move forward. The fact that people are we are not going to move the needle on equity with this bill to the point where it should have been moved. We made progress on wage theft. We have a law that goes further than any other state in the nation. We are now finally going to put these businesses that use it as a business model to steal money from people, we are going to put an end to that. And there are multiple protections in here for businesses that treat their employees fairly, with respect, and they believe and follow the law. It's the best we could do right now to make everybody as happy or as unhappy as they could be under the wage theft. But it took 3.5 weeks of negotiating. A wage theft bill should not have taken 3.5 weeks of negotiating to get it done. I'm very frustrated at how much time and energy was spent on protecting big businesses, medium-sized businesses that treat their employees with respect and dignity and fairness, when we didn't have to spend that much time doing it. We continue to make progress on the child care crisis in our state. with investments in both home-based and center-based providers. Would we have liked to have gotten more and been able to do more? Yes. We have $3 million in this bill for dairy farmers, on top of the $5 million in the egg bill. And this effort will help save 2,600 small dairy farms. The big kids in that industry can protect themselves, but the small dairy farmers that have seen their income go from $50,000 or $60,000 down to $15,000, this was the best we could do, $8 million. And I think we should have found a way to do better. And this is a program that helps them, that pays for 25% of the federal program, insurance program for dairy farmers. And in a dairy state like Minnesota, we should have stepped up more. This is a good start. And I hope between now and the middle and the next time we're back here, we can find another way to fund more to help our dairy farmers. I may be an urban kid, but I spent my summers working on my uncle's dairy farm, and I know how tough that job is. Getting up at 5 in the morning, getting back there by 5 in the evening, cleaning out a barn, always trying to figure out how to keep your cows healthy and safe. We should have done more. We started a new program called Launch Minnesota that will help many people start new businesses. We've instructed the commissioner to focus on as much as he possibly is able to on innovative, forward-thinking businesses that will stand up in the next generations and be compared to the 3Ms and the Medtronics and the larger companies that employ thousands and thousands of people in the generations to come. Sometimes it's the hardest thing to do is to plant a tree that you never get to sit underneath. But as a jobs committee, we need to invest in the future, and we are trying to do that. We are pushing for accountability in the deed programs and all the programs that they provide for. This will help the legislature strive to making awards in a better and more equitable way in the future. We have advanced the ability of Minnesota and the Department of Commerce to return unclaimed property to people to whom it rightfully belongs. These are millions of dollars that people forget about or lose because of a death in the family. And they deserve to get this money back. We as a state don't have the right to be able to use this money. This is their money. And if we are going to spend a few million dollars to get it back to them, it's the right thing to do. Minnesotans demanded progress on wage theft, and we delivered it. There are a lot of people we are going to help in this bill, but not enough people will we be able to help. We will help the disabled workers, our dairy farmers, parents seeking child care, the entrepreneurs of the state, and the commissioner has been told that he needs to keep an eye on Greater Minnesota, if he possibly can, if we're going to make the millions and millions of dollars in investment in Internet connection out in Greater Minnesota, we should also make the investment in the entrepreneurs in Greater Minnesota. On the whole, this is a bill I can live with, and I will be voting for and progressing forward. Is it a bill that I would have written by myself if I had had the ability to do that? No. In a legislative session setting, we are supposed to compromise. This was the compromise the Senate would take. I better shut up before I actually start telling you what I really think. Representative Wagenius.
As you all know, or probably know, I chair the Energy and Climate Committee in the House. And I'm going to talk to you about what happened with energy and climate. House DFLers passed an energy bill that Minnesotans demanded. Mm-hmm. It would commit Minnesota to a clean energy future and accelerate the rapidly expanding number of high-paying clean energy jobs. Republicans pretend there's no climate crisis, so nothing needs to be done. Doing nothing includes stopping us from growing renewable energy jobs in Minnesota. And that's what happened. A collision between the fossil fuel industry and our children's future, and our bill died in the crash. Representative Long is going to talk to us a bit about the governor's bill that was part that died in the crash.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Wagenius. We had a, I think, package that came out of the House floor and our work with the governor that was historic. I want to thank Commissioner Kelly and Governor Walz for the administration's leadership on clean energy. The proposal that we brought forward together called for 100% clean energy. It called for clean energy first, which was a bipartisan proposal carried by Representative Stevenson over here and Senator Senjum in the Senate. It was co-authored by Senator Pratt, the co-chair of our conference committee, and also included provisions on energy efficiency to improve the conservation improvement program. We were unable to get any of those provisions through the conference committee, regrettably. And even though we had bipartisan authorship on several of those pieces, even though we had, I think, historic support for clean energy here in the legislature, we had hundreds of folks turn out to our very first hearing on 100%. We had hundreds of folks turn out to a rally last week of session. There were two climate strikes that students participated in at the Capitol. We had a historic position taken by Governor Walz calling for clean energy. We had in the House a historic vote on the House floor for 100% clean energy. We also had many of my colleagues shared with me that they heard more on clean energy than almost any other issue this session. So we know that the public is demanding this, but the Senate stood in the way of action on trying to move forward on clean energy. So we wound up with a bill that didn't include the bipartisan clean energy first, didn't include other bipartisan provisions that weren't in the governor's bill, including building energy efficiency, including rooftop solar, including electric vehicle charging, including electric vehicle rebates, including consumer data. These were all bipartisan bills that we weren't able to get through the conference process because of the Senate's obstruction. So I think we are disappointed in the result of this conference process, but we should, I think, not underestimate the progress that has been made with the public this year, with the voices that have been heard here, particularly the voices of young people and students who came and testified in front of this committee. And we know that those voices are going to only grow louder. We know that the public is supportive of creating more clean energy jobs and taking more action on climate change. And we know that the Senate isn't going to be able to stand in the way forever.
We will now have the nonpartisan staff walk through the articles, the spreadsheets, and go over the bill. So if I could call Ms. Beckel to the table, and please go over the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Solveig Beckel, and I am the House Fiscal Analyst for the Jobs, Energy, and Commerce area. I'm going to start by explaining the spreadsheet that is in your folders. All right. Before I begin, I'd just like to briefly mention the accounts that are within the purview of this committee or this combined committee. The Department of Employment and Economic Development is one of the largest agencies that this area has. It also covers the Department of Labor and Industry, the Bureau of Mediation Services, the Department of Commerce, the Public Utilities Commission, and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. Within the budget targets given this committee are also the statutory appropriations from the general fund to the Destination Medical Center in Rochester and to the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Department. I will start with DEED, or the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Looking at the spreadsheet, you can see the current biennium. This means fiscal years 18 and 19, then the base number. So that is what was previously established in law. Then the governor's proposal, the House proposal, the Senate proposal, and finally the conference committee that reflects the bill in front of you. Looking to the right of the looking at the column that says change from base to the right of the fiscal year 2021 column, you will see increases from the base level of funding. Okay, the first subdivision of DEED is business and community development. A number of base programs retained the same base funding they have had in the past, including the Greater Minnesota Business Development Program and the Business Development Competitive Grant Program. Then you can see what is now titled Launch. I apologize for not fixing that on the spreadsheet before this meeting. Then more base funding, including the contaminated site cleanup, the Center for Rural Policy and Development, the Destination Medical Center Administration, and the Host Community Economic Development Program. Then there are a number of programs whose funding is now through a different fund. These used to be in the general fund or were in the general fund in the House position, but now are in the Workforce Development Fund, which we will get to shortly. Following down, new items were added, including the Hmong Chamber of Commerce and the Rondo Community Land Trust, which both received $250,000 over the biennium. The child care funding that Chair Mahoney mentioned is next, and you can see the increase of $750,000 to child care business startups and the Minnesota Initiative Foundations. Continuing on is the Minnesota Job Creation Fund. This is one of the larger items that DEED works with. It is a fund essentially set aside to create jobs. Minnesota Investment Fund, same thing. This did receive slightly less funding than base in this biennium. Before, the base was $25 million, and now it is at $23.94 million. From this amount, there is a carve-out to the Verso paper mill in Duluth for $2 million. And then there is also the Airport Infrastructure Renewal Program in Faribault and the first in the Upper Midwest Robotics Hubs. These were suggested to be funded from the Minnesota Investment Fund by the Senate. But after further evaluation, it was decided they would just come from the general fund. The next items that received funding in this biennium are all base items. They include emerging entrepreneurs, the Minnesota Film and TV Board and related items, and the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program. If you'll turn the page, that brings us to other funds in the business and community development area. The top item is the contaminated site and cleanup development grants, and these are from the remediation fund. This is the only item from the remediation fund, indeed. Next, we go on to the workforce development fund. The lines that are shaded as you go down the spreadsheet, those are new items or they've been moved to that area. So these are items that may have been in the general fund before. The job training grants were base funding. The Metropolitan Job Training Grants did not make it to the final bill. And then these are some nonprofit organizations that received funding. Neighborhood Development Center at $1.3 million. Metro Economic Development Association at $800,000. White Earth Nation at $250,000. Enterprise Minnesota at $900,000. And Youth Prize at $1 million over the biennium. Then you can see the totals for that area. Moving on to employment and training programs, you can see the top three items were in the base. So you'll have to follow down with me to line 102 to see any change to base. This is the Pathways to Prosperity program. Originally, the base was $8.078 million. The committees decided to lower the base appropriation for this so that in fiscal years 20 and 21, it would receive $2.188 million, and in fiscal years 22 and 23, it would receive $5.092 million. The next line is accessibility. This was a nonprofit organization presented by the Senate. Then the Southeast Asian Communities, that is base funding. The Self-Sufficiency and Job Development Grants is also base funding. And the Youth at Work grant program is also funded at base levels. On page 3, there are the Workforce Development Fund appropriations. This bill moved a number of the nonprofit and equity funding items from the general fund to the Workforce Development Fund. So you will see a number of new items here. 180 Degrees Job Readiness Grant and Cook County Higher Education did not receive funding, but Propel Nonprofits received $500,000. Minnesota Grocers Association, Carts to Careers, received $100,000. And the American Indian Communities OIC received $1 million over the biennium. The next items that are both funded and new, at least on top of base funding, they may have received funding this current biennium, are Emerge, the Minneapolis Foundation for North at Work, the Construction Careers Foundation, the CLUES program, and the Twin Cities Rise program. And you can see that respectively they received $500,000, $800,000, $750,000, $1.25 million and $1.4 million over the biennium. Next, you may remember the discretionary pools that the House established in the first House bill, but those were disbanded in the course of discussions. So Minnesota Diversified Industries will receive a direct appropriation of $200,000 over the biennium. Minnesota High Tech Association will receive $1.75 million. And then the three items below that are base funding. Below that, Bridges to Healthcare gets $500,000, Avivo $500,000, and Better Futures Minnesota $300,000. Advocating Change Together was not in this bill, and the Southeast Asian Communities receives general fund funding as compared to the Workforce Development Fund funding. The Hmong American Partnership received $1 million, the Displaced Homemaker Program, $200,000, Summit Academy OIC, $2 million. The Youth at Work Grant Program received its base funding, as did the Youth Build Program and the Minnesota Youth Program. Big Brothers Big Sisters received $500,000 over the biennium. And then moving down, Ujamaa Place received $1 million over the biennium. Both the YWCA in St. Paul and the YWCA in Minneapolis received $250,000 over the biennium. The Regional Center for Entrepreneurial Facilitation received $300,000. And the Cedar Riverside Partnership received $300,000. And that completes the Employment and Economic Development, or Employment and Training Programs area of DEED. These next subdivisions of DEED are smaller in general. The only change to the general support services was that the capacity building grants were not funded in this bill, and you can see that on line 180. In the Minnesota Trade Office, nothing changed from base. They received no more and no less than their base funding. DEED's Vocational Rehabilitation Program received an increase of $7 million over the biennium. This was in part to ensure that Minnesota would be eligible for matching federal funding for similar programs. And then if you go down to line 205, you'll see that out of the Workforce Development Fund, there was an increase of $1.8 million for employment support for persons with mental illness. In services for the blind, they also just received base funding. And then you'll note that paid family and medical leave is visible in the spreadsheet but did not receive funding in this bill. Below that, on line 223, is the appropriation to the dairy farmers. It's called the Dairy Assistance Investment and Relief Initiative, or DAIRI. On line 226, there is a general fund revenue item. This was due to changing some of the policies surrounding the Minnesota Investment Fund loans. Then on page 5, you can see the totals for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Overall, they were directly appropriated $245,798,000 for this biennium. On page 6 is the Department of Labor and Industry. In the workers' compensation area, which is funded through the Workers' Compensation Fund, the only change from base is that $3 million is appropriated for the update of the workers' compensation IT system. In labor standards and apprenticeship, there were no substantive changes. Helmets to hard hats was funded at $400,000 over the biennium. In the workplace safety area, they received base funding.
Spechtel, did you miss the line on the wage theft prevention initiative on line 260?
Mr. Chair, I definitely did. I apologize. if you'll return with me. We've had very little sleep. If you'll return with me to line 260, you will see the very important to the chair line on wage theft. This bill included a variety of wage theft updates and policy changes, and it received an appropriation of $2.046 million each year for an increase of $3.092 million over the biennium. I apologize. In the general support division, funds for an IT systems modernization were allocated, $1 million this biennium, or the coming biennium, and $1.8 million in the TAILS. The youth skills training program received an increase of $1.2 million over base. And then below this, you can see the other expenditures and revenues. The policy to ensure the wage theft revenue was not included in the bill, but the combative sports fee reductions, revenue and expenditures, are there from the changes to the combative sports policy. Additionally, the bill allowed for up to $500,000 in spending on the Contractor Recovery Fund consumer awareness campaign. And then on the top of page 7, you will see the Department of Labor and Industry totals. The next item is the Bureau of Mediation Services. The changes here include an increase for the mediator training program of $224,000 over the biennium, and they kept the base funding for the Public Employee Relations Board planning where it had originally been taken out. Then there are the totals for the Bureau of Mediation Services. Below this, on line 340, is the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. They received operating increases from base, totaling $601,000 over the biennium. The Public Facilities Authority does not receive any direct appropriations typically, but did in the current biennium, so it is listed there. On page 8, is the Department of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation, and you can see the statutory funding they get as part of their taxation system. On line 363 is the Destination Medical Center. This received roughly $9 million in the current biennium, but due to the language and statute will receive increasing amounts of funds up to a level. So this biennium, they will receive roughly $37 million. The Public Utilities Commission received an operating increase. They also received approval for doing assessments, essentially, to include more FTEs. And there are the total appropriations for the Public Utilities Commission. On line 9 of the spreadsheet, we come to the Commerce Department. The Commerce Department received over $2 million in operating increases over all of their divisions. The Energy Resources received an increase of $138,000 for their operating costs. They also got some of the litigation expenses from the North Dakota case covered. And then this is the area that would have received more funding through the renewable development account had that gone forward. But you can see the base funding for the renewable development account, which is $100,000 each year for the Made in Minnesota administration and the $500 each year for the third-party evaluator. One item was added to this in this bill. It is the Energy Storage Systems Cost-Benefit Analysis Program, and that received $150,000 in fiscal year 19, so will be complete upon final enactment. The Petroleum Tank Release Compensation Board received its base funding. Telecommunications received an increase of $46,000. And then the Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing received an operating increase of $900,000 over the biennium. The Commerce Financial Institutions Department looks a little different than it did in the base funding. This is because the assessments that they do on financial institutions, the funding for that will now not go to the general fund, but to a special revenue fund set aside for the administration of the financial institutions division. So they are no longer appropriated direct general fund spending. So you can see that decrease of $840,000 over each biennium. But I will point out later where their new funding is. In administrative services, there was also an operating increase, as well as litigation expenses covered, their IT modernization system funded to an extent, and then the unclaimed property spending in order to yield higher revenues later on. The broadband development received its base funding. Rulemaking for Minvest was not funded in this, and the Real Estate Advisory Board compensation was funded to $10,000 over the biennium. Okay, on page 10 is the Enforcement or Market Assurance Division of Commerce. This also received an operating increase. The next is the insurance division. This also received an operating increase. This bill also adds $30,000 each biennium for the National Council of Insurance Legislators or Legislatures. I forget. Then you'll see the Workers' Compensation Fund, and that is funded at base levels. And then we come to the end of the Commerce Department. As I mentioned earlier, the financial institutions' fee redirection is visible on line 473. It was a decrease of $1.1 million to the general fund each biennium, but then an increase to the special revenue account of $1.1 million each biennium, and now the Financial Institutions Division of Commerce may use these redirected funds for their administration. On page 11 are all the totals for the Commerce Department. Below that were some of the agencies that would have received funding had paid family leave moved forward. And then underneath this is the renewable development account. As you can see, none of the changes were implemented except for the energy storage cost-benefit analysis I mentioned earlier. Finally, on page 12, you will see all of the funding, the total funding by fund. So thank you for your patience. And that is the spreadsheet.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Bechtel? Seeing none, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Anna Shaleen and Ben Weeks will explain the bill itself. Bob Eloff is also going to explain the extensive energy bill.
All right, Chair and members, Anna Shaleen, House Research. We're starting with Article 2, Jobs Policy, on page 33 of the bill. With Section 1, this creates the Airport Infrastructure Renewal, or AIR, grant program to provide up to 50% of the capital costs of redeveloping existing airport facilities or constructing new ones, and for infrastructure costs, including broadband. On page 34, Section 2 requires DEED to do a report to the legislature every 2 years, which provides specific information on every economic development program provided or overseen by the state of Minnesota. On page 36, sections 3, 4, and 5 allow port authorities in Duluth, Red Wing, and Winona to do meetings by telephone or electronic means. On page 36, section 6, and this section continues until page 49, and all of that just extends retroactively the fiscal year 2018 appropriation to the Boys Fort Tribal Employment Rights Office, or TIRO, until the end of fiscal year 2019. Moving on to page 49, section 7, this makes a one-time exception to how local governments can spend repayments for MIF loans. In exchange for transferring 20% of the uncommitted funds to the state general fund, the local government can spend the remainder for any lawful purpose. On page 50, section 8, this section establishes the Launch Minnesota, formerly known as the Minnesota Innovation Collaborative, which is a system of supports for entrepreneurs and new technologies, including grants for research and development and training. The language in this section includes compromise language, including changes from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, as well as Senate provisions which prioritize veterans, remove health care costs from grant eligibility, and have the program expire in 4 years, with the first report in 2022.
Chair Mahoney and members, Ben Weeks, House Research. Article 3, which begins on page 16, I believe. This is the page 56. My one looks like a 5 or the other way around. These are the policy changes related to wage theft. And a lot of this is compromise language, so it's changed from what has been in earlier bills. So I will just briefly run through the sections. Section 1, this deals with the minimum criteria to be included on the state's responsible contractor list and adds, as disqualifying factors, a conviction for criminal wage theft or a violation of two wage theft-related sections, 181.03 and 181.101. Section 2, which begins on page 58 and is titled Enforcement, this clarifies existing and expands Department of Labor and Industry enforcement powers over chapters 177, 181, 181A, and 184. It brings some of those powers more closely in line with their inspection and enforcement powers under the department's OSHA responsibilities and workers' compensation responsibilities. Section 3, also on page 58 at the bottom, this increases the maximum fine for repeat violation for a failure to submit records requested by the Department of Labor and Industry to a maximum of $5,000. Then on page 59, section 4, this requires the Department of Labor and Industry to share their orders to comply or resolutions of those orders with relevant public licensing or contracting entities, and also to share those with employees affected. So employees of the employer who had a violation or was out of compliance with law. On page 60, section 5, this requires employers to keep some additional employment records, including the basis of pay for an employee, for instance, whether they're paid hourly, salary, piece rate basis, or the like. It requires employers to keep a list of personnel policies that employees have been given. And it also requires them to keep a copy of a notice that employees must be given at the beginning of work, which I'll discuss in a minute. And this section also increases the maximum fine for repeat violations of failure to keep these records to $5,000. On page 61, section 6, this adds hindering or delaying Department of Labor and Industry in the performance of its duties under basically its wage enforcement duties under Chapter 181 to an existing misdemeanor crime. Section 7, page 62, this gives express authority for the Attorney General to enforce Chapter 177, which deals with minimum wage, overtime, and prevailing wage. This, arguably, the Attorney General already has this power under Section 8.31, but this clarifies that they certainly do. Section 8 on page 62, this provides that enforcement of Chapter 81 by the Department does not preclude other types of enforcement, other public enforcement or private enforcement provided in law. Also on page 62, Section 9, this provides that Section 181.03 does not limit the application of other federal and state laws. Also, again, on page 62, Section 10, this prohibits retaliation against employees for asserting a broad category of rights, rights under 177.21 to 177.244, and also 181.01 to 181.723 and 181.79. Those are all sections of law that relate to the right to be paid either a minimum wage or prevailing wage or overtime or just the general right to be paid what you're owed for work. Section 11 is on page 62. There's some significant changes here. This changes section 181.032, which currently lists what things need to be included basically on an employee's pay stub, the piece of paper or electronic document that a person gets when they're paid on their regular payday. In addition to what's already required, now it will be required to include the basis of pay, whether it's hourly, piece rate, or the like, any allowances for meals and lodgings, and the address and telephone number of the employer. This section also creates a new requirement for employers to give a similar written notice when the employee starts employment, and that notice includes a variety of information about employee pay, and the employee has to sign it acknowledging receipt, and the employer has to keep the record, as I mentioned earlier. And finally, the section also requires that an employer has to give notice to the employee whenever anything in that original written notice is going to change. Moving on to page 64, section 12, this is where essentially now wage theft is defined in law. This states the substantive right that an employee is to be paid everything that was in the agreement with the employer that they must be paid, in addition the right that they need be paid at least minimum wage or any other law requiring them to be paid a certain wage. This was called into some minor question in some court cases, and this clarifies that. And it also provides clarity on some penalties for failure to pay wages on time, as well as a new section that clarifies what happens when an employer fails to pay commissions on time. Section 13 on page 65 is similar to the earlier section I discussed about Attorney General enforcement, but this clarifies that the Attorney General has enforcement power over Chapter 181 in addition to enforcement by the Department. And then on beginning on 65 and continuing through the end of the article are three sections that together create a specific crime for wage theft. The first section, Section 14, adds some definitions related to criminal wage theft, including defining wage theft. The second section adds authorizing or engaging in wage theft with the intent to defraud to the list of specific acts that include that constitutes theft under the criminal statute. And finally, Section 16 includes criminal wage theft in a list of crimes eligible for enhanced penalties and also allows for the aggregation of individual offenses for charging and sentencing purposes. So, for example, if an employer stole $200 per pay period over the course of months, the way the law is written, that $200 theft would be a misdemeanor, but including wage theft in this provision allows a prosecutor to aggregate all of those thefts over a six-month period and charge it as either a gross misdemeanor or a felony. And that's the end of the wage theft article. Members, articles 4 through 8, beginning on page 74 and continuing all the way through page 95, are the enactments of the recommendations of the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council from 2018. And these were passed in identical fashion as a standalone bill in the Senate and were passed also in identical fashion as part of House File 2208, the House Jobs Omnibus Bill.
Article 9, Labor and Industry Policy, beginning on page 95, Section 1. This adds specific requirements when using retainage in public building and construction contracts for public improvements. On page 97, sections 2 and 3, these make modifications to the Youth Skills Training Program to limit grants to $100,000 per local partnership. Page 99, sections 4 through 7, these are all DLI housekeeping provisions, allowing email to be used for notices in addition to existing methods and clarifying definitions. On page 102, section 8, this clarifies existing requirements for accessibility of public buildings. Page 103, sections 9 and 10, more DLI housekeeping, require plumbers to display their name and license number on their vehicle and strike outdated language. Page 104, section 11, adds a yearly continuing education requirement for certain licensed contractors of 1 hour of business management education. Also on page 104, section 12, another DLI housekeeping provision clarifying that sanctions can also apply to unlicensed individuals. On page 106, section 13 adds specific requirements when using retainage in building and construction contracts for the design, building, or repair of buildings, roads, and bridges. Page 107, sections 14 through 16, these are changes to the combative sports licensing, lowering fees, and removing some license requirements. Page 109, section 17, this is in error in the bill twice. It will be removed by the reviser as soon as possible. It was also included in the appropriations section, but right now it's section 17, and it allows DLI to use up to $500,000 a year from the Contractor Recovery Fund for a statewide consumer awareness campaign on the importance of hiring licensed contractors. Page 109, section 18, the last DLI housekeeping provision repeals old rules on plumber advertising to conform to how other licensed individuals are treated. Article 10, Commerce Policy. Page 109, Section 1. This redirects funds from assessments, examination fees, and so on to the financial institution's account to fund the department's work, effective July 1st, 2019. On page 110, starting on page 110, sections 2 through 11, these are all alterations to regulations on real estate appraisers. On page 114, sections 12 and 13, this is compromise language from the Department of Commerce. We did not include in the bill the unclaimed property language that was previously in the House bill. Instead, this only includes the interest claims payment language for unclaimed property. Finally, on page 116, section 14, this is one last regulation for real estate appraisers.
Thank you. Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, the energy provisions of this bill are contained in Article 11, which begins at the bottom of page 116. Section 1 makes a change to XL Energy's Solar Rewards Program, which makes payments to owners of small and medium-sized solar projects according to the amount of solar energy they generate. Currently, the threshold, the maximum threshold for the size of project that qualifies for solar rewards is measured in terms of direct current. This bill changes that to measure it by in terms of alternating current, and the implication is that it allows for slightly larger capacity projects to qualify for a solar rewards program. On page 117, section 2 authorizes public utility to petition the Public Utilities Commission to make investments in energy storage system pilot projects and to recover the costs of those investments. It also specifies what information needs to be included in the petition. At the bottom of page 118, section 3, this section contains reporting requirements for owners of solar sites who employ solar site management practices that provide benefits to game birds, songbirds, and pollinators. Those reports are to be made to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. On page 119, section 4, adds a definition of energy storage system to the Integrated Resource Plan statutes. At the bottom of page 120, section 5, also amends the Integrated Resource Plan statutes to require public utilities to file an integrated resource plan to include in that filing an assessment of how energy storage systems would meet generation and capacity needs. At the top of page 121, section 6 is a provision that sunset in June of 2018. This provision is revived and reenacted and now sunsets in 2021. This allows the Department of Commerce to assess up to $500,000 a year on utilities to raise funds that allow it to represent the state in regional and national bodies that deal with energy policy or energy regulation. The next four sections are amendments to the commercial PACE program, stands for Property Assessed Clean Energy. This is a program that allows commercial establishments to take out loans to do energy conservation projects or renewable energy projects and then repay those loans over time through an assessment on their property taxes. Section 7 on page 121 allows new construction to be funded through PACE. Section 8 on page 122 specifically says that qualifying commercial real property includes new construction. Section 9 on page 122 increases the maximum amount of PACE loans to be 20% of the appraised value rather than the assessed value. And at the bottom of page 122 is section 10, which states that cost-effective energy improvements financed under PACE are deemed to be real property or a fixture attached to real property. The next two sections on page 123, section 11 and 12, correct an incorrect reference that was made in legislation enacted in 2017 regarding the name of an account. On page 124, near the bottom, section 13 requires the Public Utilities Commission to convene a stakeholder group that will examine the diversity of utility workforces and supply chains and make recommendations and report to be issued to the legislature in January of 2020. And in the middle of page 125 is section 14, which requires the Commissioner of Commerce to contract with an independent consultant to analyze the potential costs and benefits of energy storage systems. That concludes the energy section of the bill.
And Mr. Chair and members, the final article of the bill, Article 12, beginning on page 126, this contains recommendations of the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. These are predominantly changes in preparation for the replacement of the current technology system used for workers' compensation claims, which has been around since 1992. The new system is going to be called the Claims Access and Management Platform User System, or CAMPUS, and it's a web-based system that manages basically all aspects of workers' compensation claims and disputes. And this was passed in identical form by the House as a standalone bill, which was House File 2311. And, Mr. Chair, that is the end of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Weeks. that ends the presentation that we will be doing today. I know some of the commissioners, I actually have all of the commissioners invested in this bill, have said that they wanted to say a few words. They probably wanted to praise me. Subtle hint. So, Commissioner Kelly, would you like to step down first, and then we'll have Commissioner Lepik and Commissioner Grove.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members, I'm Steve Kelly. I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce, and I don't really have any substantive comments regarding the bill. We appreciate the opportunity to work with all of the members of the conference committee on the different portions of the bill. I know that there were hopes for more substantial gains in the energy policy area that we were not able to realize, but we appreciated the House's support for our budget elements that are contained in this compromise bill. And I want to thank the two chairs and other members of the conference committee for their hard work, as well as the House staff, both nonpartisan and partisan. They were, I know, resources to the conferees, but also to the commissioners who were participating in the conversation. So we very much appreciated that support from your staff as well as our own. And I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee members may have.
Are there any questions for the Commissioner of Commerce? Any questions? Seeing none, I will say that I hope we gave you a better reception than the last committee you were in. I heard there were some comments made about energy over there, and we'll just let that settle. We'll take the blame we're ready for, but not worry about it any more than that.
And enough said, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Lepik.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Nancy Lepink, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I'd like to extend my sincere appreciation to the House Conference Committee and the House Conference Committee Chairs, Representative Mahoney and Representative Wagenius, and also, of course, to the significant assistance at every hour of the day by the House staff. It was critical to the success, the successes that we did achieve in this bill. I believe to reach the final result that was just presented demonstrated a strong commitment to the interests of all Minnesotans, and I appreciate the commitment to the issue of preventing wage theft in Minnesota, both by establishing a strong law but also providing the department with sufficient resources to administer and enforce that new law. This bill and the resources that go with it go a long way in creating a level playing field for Minnesota's employers who do play by the rules and want to create decent jobs for their workers, and for ensuring Minnesota's workers that they receive the pay that they have earned. I also appreciate that the bill will provide us with the necessary resources to complete the important modernization of the IT system for workers' compensation. This is a very complicated process that we ask workers and employers and insurers to go through, but this system will significantly improve their engagement with that system and their ability to navigate the system. And I also appreciate the resources that were provided for the department's role in the workforce development in the state, in particular the YST program and the Helmets to Hard Hats program. And I very much look forward to working with each of the members of the committee and each of the over the coming months and years. I think we have forged a strong partnership and understanding of what the department needs to do and how the department can be of assistance to the legislative process. So thank you.
Are there any questions for the Commissioner of Labor and Industry? Are there any questions for the Commissioner? I have one comment.
Yes.
Thank you for your extraordinary work on wage theft.
You're welcome.
You were a You were a rock star. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Commissioner Grove from Deed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here. And I think from the perspective of the governor's office, as it relates to Deed, this is a good bill. There's a lot in here to be proud of. A lot of things we didn't get, but a lot of things that we did. And in the art of compromise, I think we landed in a place where every single thing in this bill we like. There's some things we didn't get, but everything that ended up in it is something that we are eager to go and do. And I think that's a testament to the hard work of this committee. So we thank you for that. I think there's a couple things I want to point out about the bill that we're excited about. I think, first of all, it really does look to the future. The chair mentioned this a moment ago. We did a lot of things in this bill to prepare our economy for where we're headed. We helped the paper mill in Duluth transform its operations to prepare for a future in which cardboard production is more important than glossy paper. We created a new program called Launch Minnesota to help entrepreneurs thrive across the state, something that I think is critical to building our economy as we move forward. We reinvested in an internship program to get young students from difficult backgrounds into internships in technology, which we think is a big step forward. We were able to preserve a lion's share of our money for the Minnesota Investment Fund to help new businesses come to the state. And we invested in a lot of nonprofits and organizations that help small businesses grow. So I think this is a really future-looking bill. I also think that we worked hard to help disadvantaged workers across the state find employment. The chair mentioned earlier the funding for vocational rehabilitation services to help workers with disabilities find jobs. We think that's really important. That's something we were in agreement with the Senate on, and we're glad to see land at $7 million. We also spent a lot of time and energy focused on the nonprofits that focus on the opportunity gap in this state. You heard earlier some of the nonprofits who received funding from this list. That part of this exercise was difficult, and there are those who did not receive funding. I did want to remind the members here and anyone who's watching that there are a lot of competitive grant programs at Deed that remain funded at levels totaling up to $23 million. Youth at Work, Pathways to Prosperity, the Southeast Asian Economic Relief Program, Women in High-Wage, High-Demand, Non-Traditional Jobs, and the Emerging Entrepreneur Loan Fund. So we've got other opportunities for nonprofits who may not have gotten direct appropriations, and we as a department are eager to work with applicants to those programs and really to be thoughtful about constructing an arm of Deed that focuses on partnerships that is transparent, that is fair, and that moves quickly to get taxpayer money into the hands of great organizations to do good work here in the state. Lastly, I think this is a bill that fully funds our department to do good work on behalf of workers and businesses. We were able to fight off some admin fee decreases and some other policies that we felt would be damaging to our ability to fund and staff our operations. So we were glad where we ended up there. There's some things we didn't get. The chair mentioned that before as well. Paid family medical leave sticks out to me as one of the big ones that we are optimistic on at the start of the session. We remain optimistic that this will be a state in the future that has a policy like that, that helps workers take care of their loved ones or themselves in moments of need. But we'll live to fight another day on that one. I would just lastly say, I would echo the comments of my fellow commissioners, Lepink and Kelly, that it was a pleasure to work with all of you in this process. As a new commissioner, I really enjoyed getting to know all of you. Look forward to getting to know you more in the future. In particular, I want to thank Chair Mahoney. He is a tenacious and passionate and thoughtful leader, and I really enjoyed working with you and look forward to more of it in the future. Everything that you contributed to this alongside our team and our friends in the Senate made this bill as good as it could possibly be. So I thank you for that, and really enjoyed working with you throughout this process. We're coming to the end of the session. Obviously, that means a lot of you will be going back to your districts when the special session wraps up, but I'd encourage you to keep reaching out to Deed. We want to keep hearing from you throughout this year. We want you to hold us accountable. We want you to tell us where we could do better. We want you to help bring new and creative ideas to our department to make sure we're making this state and this economy better for everybody, and we look forward to that in the months and weeks to come. So thank you.
Are there any questions for the commissioner? Any questions for the commissioner? I will add this. The person from the conference committee, Representative Hudasan, was sat in on almost all of these meetings and was tenacious and powerful advocate for the issues that she saw were parts for the state and for her district. Sorry she can't be here to hear me give her the praise that she is due. But Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Appreciate it. Are there any other testifiers that would like to speak to the council? Please come forward. Good afternoon. Please identify yourself for the tape. And I thought we were going to have to limit testimony, but keep it as brief as you think you can get all your praise out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Anjali Mishra Cameron, and I'm Research Director at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. I will try and be brief in my gratitude to you, Chair Mahoney, and the members of the Conference Committee for your inclusion of the Southeast Asian Equity Grant Program in the Conference Committee report. So just as a reminder, the Council's estate agency advised charged with advising you, the legislators, on behalf of more than 300,000 Minnesotans of more than 60 Asian and Pacific Island nations. Our council also uniquely understands that the American dream is tied through and achieved by economic stability. We thank the chair for his recognition in addressing the economic disparities experienced by our communities, not by their own choosing, but simply because of where they live or the manner with in which they arrived to this country. So I just briefly want to highlight that Minnesota's Southeast Asian refugee community includes communities like the Hmong, the Lao, the Cambodian, the Karen, and Karani, who are our newest refugee communities arriving from Burma. We applaud the restoration of the Southeast Asian Competitive Grant Program to its full $2 million appropriation as recommended by the 90th Legislature and echoed in Governor Walz's proposal to organizations providing services to relieve economic disparities in the Southeast Asian community. This grant program is an essential component of the state's effort to address economic realities faced by refugee-experienced populations because it specifically targets groups not currently served in other DEED programs. I also just want to highlight that as the current workforce retires, we will increasingly rely on these younger communities of color to keep Minnesota's economy competitive with other states. Therefore, it is critical that we support these young workers by increasing their access to capital for small businesses, adult basic education, and job training opportunities that meet them where they are at. In recognition that the Southeast Asian Grant Program cannot address all of these gaps in service, we also thank the chair for recognizing the contributions made by Hmong American Partnership and the Minnesota Hmong Chamber of Commerce for their innovative programs in addressing the opportunity gap. In closing, we thank the committee for its dedication and commitment to address the economic disparities experienced by Asian Pacific Minnesotans and all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there any questions for the witness? Thank you. Mr. Tamale, please come down.
So my name is Mike Tamale of the Neighborhood Development Center. I have nothing prepared other than a huge amount of gratitude to the chair, to the entire committee, to the staff of the committee, and also to the staff of DEED, who we work so closely with. Just a huge thank you for the amount of work that goes into this, the amount of hearings you sit through, the amount of good ideas and good people that you have in front of you for months. I can't imagine how hard that job is, but you've given us a big responsibility, which is to put these funds to really good use, to track it, to come back with good data, good stories, and good results, and good impact. So I appreciate that so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other testifiers to the bill? Come on down.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Hart, and with the Commission of Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans, just want to thank you for including the Commission's request for increased an increase in their budget in the TAM fund. We'll be using that fund to continue to work on our age-related hearing loss initiatives, working on affordable hearing aids, working on increasing and improving education outcomes for children, Working on employment gaps for people with disabilities and cross-agency work that we do. We're very grateful and very thankful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other testifiers? Any other testifiers? Well, I will take this opportunity to say to staff, you got a little bit of praise here. I think if we had gone one more day, we would have hit every hour after midnight that we quit. 1, 2, 3. But the latest one was 5 o'clock, and you were all back here, I believe, by about 8 o'clock that morning. This is a long process. You performed above and beyond, and I can't thank you enough. This process would not have worked without you. I hope you rest over the summer, because I don't think the next session is going to be a whole lot easier. Seeing no other comments,
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just wanted to thank you for your leadership on the committee, especially as a first-time person on the jobs committee, and appreciate the difficult challenge that you have, and want to congratulate you on your hard-earned wage theft provision. And I think that's an important provision. I'm glad to see it in the bill. And just wanted to thank you and the committee members for your work and staff as well.
Well, thank you. And I hope when the International Center makes a request for a grant from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and if you want to write a letter, I will join that letter, because I know the good work they do, and I know how disappointed you are I couldn't make it through.
Well, I appreciate the difficult choices that you had, and I appreciate your comments on that. I know they're... We're hoping for a different outcome. People work hard for that, but that's the way the process works, and that's the way it is sometimes. So thank you for your help. Mm-hmm.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add to the thanks to the staff. Some of them are not all that are jobs do energy, and just want to make sure that the folks who did energy feel totally included in the thanks, because you all were wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Seeing no other comments or questions, adjourned.